Christmas, class of 89.
You gotta help me, Jamie. You gotta help me to find him. We both know he's alive, but you know where he is. Why are you protecting him?
Thanks for tuning in to Class of 89 on the Fangoria Podcast Network, where we take you behind the scenes of our favorite movies that turned 30 this year. I'm Natasha Pacetta, your host and vanguard of the vault over here at Fangoria, and this is the last installment of our series on Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. Cinematographer Rob Draper joins us to talk about the unique look and feel of Halloween 5. Rob deconstructs the laundry chute scene, how he slipped an Apocalypse Now nod into the film, and why he named his son after the shape. But before we get to Rob's stories, I want to tell you about the new Fangoria.com, your homepage for horror is here. Fangoria.com is now live and brimming with the digital horror content you crave. Fangoria.com is your destination for all the stories that couldn't fit in the physical magazine. Long-form pieces, deep dives, and daily thoughts from the biggest names in horror. Exclusive access to the Fangoria vault, as well as a constant curation of our favorite links from across the internet. Right now, all current subscribers to the magazine are automatically members of Fangoria.com, and as promised, the content of the new issues will forever be print only. If you're not a subscriber, check out the new Fangoria.com for yourself and see the horror right before your eyes, and use promo code CLASSOF for 15% off right now. That's Fangoria.com. And I want to tell you about my friends at Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the premier place for horror apparel and accessories from all your favorite creature features, slasher flicks, and cult classics. Now in their 16th year, Fright Rags has officially licensed products for over 50 films, releasing new collections every single week, featuring artwork from top industry artists. Professionally screen printed on super soft ring spun cotton shirts. My entire closet is basically Fright Rags shirts. Fright Rags celebrates the 30th anniversary of Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, with two brand new shirts, also available in women's hoodies and baseball tees. Listeners get 10% off your first order. Head on over to fright-rags.com and enter code FANGO40 at checkout to activate your discount. That's fright-rags.com. Now let's get to Rob's stories from the making of Halloween 5. First question, how did you become involved in Halloween 5?
Actually, it's an interesting story because Halloween 5 was really the first Hollywood film that I ever did. And I was represented by a literary agent in New York City by the name of Robbie Lance. And he represented Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson and Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton.
Oh, wow.
Leonard Bernstein.
Major celebrity ever.
Yeah, I mean, his client list was unbelievable, but he was the one who got the call on Halloween 5. And when my first son was born in 1985, I was off shooting a documentary series in Europe and the Middle East. So I didn't see my first son until he was 3 months old.
Oh, wow.
And I promised my wife that would never happen again. Hmm. So when they called me that for Halloween 5, she was pregnant with our second son, and he was due to be born right in the middle of the shoot.
Oh.
And so I had to turn it down. And my agent, Robbie Lance, said, look, you can't turn this down. This is your first Hollywood film. You have to do it. And I said, look, I promised my wife that I would be there for the birth of our second son. And so he told Mustafa Akkad, and Mustafa called me, and he said, look, if you do this film for us, I'll fly your wife out to Salt Lake City. We'll put you up in a nice condominium. We'll get you the best doctor that we can find, and we'll fly your mother over from Australia so she can be with you when the baby's born.
Wow!
And so I told my wife Sue that. And she said, okay, let's go. So, if it hadn't been for her blessing, I wouldn't have actually shot it. And
wow.
So off we went. And our son is now, both our sons are very good friends with Danielle.
Yeah.
And we we were going to name our son that was born in Salt Lake City Michael, but everyone said, no, don't do that. So we called him Paul. Yeah, he's Paul Michael.
Oh, my
and
God.
And he's an actor, so. Yeah.
So his middle name, wow, is because of Michael Myers, because you were filming
exactly,
Halloween
yes.
5. That's amazing. Oh, my gosh, that's one of the best stories I've ever heard, Rob. Wow, so Halloween 5 is very, you know, near and dear to your heart. I mean, you know, you have your whole family kind of involved in the situation now. Your son is named after Michael Myers because of this. Wow, that is so cool. So you said yes, and you started. And what was your working relationship like with director Dominic?
Dominic was fantastic, and I mean that film for me was a real challenge. Aside from the fact that it was the first real Hollywood film I'd shot, Dominic wanted to use wide angle lenses, and he liked to put the camera right in the corner of a room, but he liked the shots to be really wide and play the actors, you know, towards and away from the camera, so that again, so that you got that effect, the feeling that you were part of the film rather than just an observer.
Right.
And you know, obviously, in horror, you don't want to be front lighting, because front lighting gives all the gags away. So you want to be edge lighting and back lighting. But when you're on a wide angle lens, low in the corner of a room, there's nowhere to put the light.
So what it
meant is I had to do very minimal lighting with very small lighting units, and most of the time the lights are hidden on the floor because I had to put them under the frame because there was nowhere to put them above it. And so it was the whole show was a real challenge for lighting, largely because of the style Dominic wanted to use. But having said that, When we talked through the film, it was obvious that the way he wanted to tell the story was very different to the way it had been told before. And I think Halloween 5 has a very different sort of feeling to it than some of the others. And it was really largely because of Dominic. And the funny thing is, I did an interview about two or three years ago, and Dominic did an interview for a book that was being written, and after Dominic read it, he called me and he said, "God, I never realized how hard I made it for you on that film." And I said, yeah, you bugger, you know, you made it almost impossible to light the bloody thing. But we still talk now, and the funny thing is, we've been doing a lot of interviews for Halloween 5, because there's a guy in Barcelona wrote a book called La Noches de Halloween, which was just released about 6 months ago, and I was just interviewed a couple of months ago for an American guy who's doing a book on Halloween as well.
Oh, cool! Yeah, I mean, it's the 30th anniversary of Halloween 5 this year, so it's nice to go back and look at it.
Holy mackerel! 30 years.
Yep. Interesting with this movie, you're right, it does look very different from any of the other Halloween movies in the franchise, and I think it really stands out because of that. And there's a lot of compelling scenes in this movie that look like it really took a lot of care and detail in setting them up, and one of them is the laundry chute scene with Daniel Harris and Don Shanks as Michael Myers. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the difficulties of shooting this scene and why it's one of your favorites?
Yeah, well, the laundry chute scene is pretty much everyone's favorite scene from the film, just about.
It's so good.
But, when I read the script, you know, I sort of read it and I thought, how the hell am I going to do this? And we sat down and we talked about what sort of shots we'd want for it, and because the challenge was, how do you light inside a laundry chute, you know, because there's really no light source. So
right.
I had to come up with a lighting design that would work for that. But the final, Dominic and I went through and we worked out all the shots we'd like, and then we sat down with the production designer, Brent Swift, and Brent went away and he drew a whole series of boards. We had it storyboarded, and then he drew a series of boards that represented set pieces that we could use to shoot each of the elements we needed. And I think in the end he came up with there were over 20 different elements to the laundry chute, so that we could shoot, you know, side on. We had vertical elements. We had pieces with the door.
Oh, wow.
That flapped out. We had one long piece that we had a camera mounted on a skateboard that we rolled up the center.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, attached to a pole. We had there were all these set pieces, and then we just put the set pieces together with the storyboards we'd made. And the night we shot it, we just went from one to another and shot the elements we needed, and then it all got cut together, and it worked great.
Oh, yeah. And
I love the laundry chute sequence. I think it's fantastic. And it's really, really the production designer, Brent Swift, was the guy who made that work, because without him building all those set pieces, all the shots that Dominic and I had come up with wouldn't have been possible. But the one thing Dominic didn't want was he didn't want it to look oversized. You know, because a lot of the times when you see people in air conditioning chutes and stuff like that, they look too big. And that was one thing he wanted. He wanted it to be real size. So that's why we needed so many elements, and elements with, you know, slits cut out of them and portholes to put the camera in and all that sort of stuff.
Wow. Yeah, because it really does have a claustrophobic feel to it, and you feel like you're in that shoot with Danielle Harris, and you know, it's just done so realistically, and you're right, like in a real world that shoot would be pitch black. So
yeah, I know
that must have been, you know, but when you're watching it, like, that never ever crosses your mind. I'm sure it never crossed anybody's mind, you know, because it's so well done.
Yeah, well, the shoot sequence ended up a little bit brighter than I really would have liked it, because when the final timing was done, they lifted it just a little bit, so I would have had it a little bit darker. But you're right. I mean, the drama of the scene and the shot selection and the way it was cut together, and, you know, Dominic's storytelling. You forget the lighting. You know, the lighting is like, okay, there shouldn't be any light in the laundry chute, but yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no one ever has ever, you know, thought that at all watching that scene. Yeah. So.
Yeah, no one ever says, oh my God, where's that light coming from?
Right, right. And that's, you know, a testament to your skill. It really is. Like, you know, we forget that just out of frame, there's a bunch of people and there's a bunch of lighting equipment everywhere, and it has to be very strategically placed and set up for each setup. And I just love that about Movie Magic, because, you know, when it's done well, you don't even think of those things. They don't exist, because you're watching, you know, you're watching something that your mind's thinking is real, and it's an illusion, actually. But yeah, just wonderful job on the laundry chute scene. That's so cool.
Yeah, and some of the scenes in the house towards the end, when Loomis is walking up the stairs and sneaking around, were a little bit of an ode to Apocalypse Now, because I wanted to. I said to Donald Pleasance, "Look, I want to light some of the scenes like the scene with Marlon Brando at the end of Apocalypse Now, where there was just a little bit of light and he moved in and out of it and played around." And Donald Pleasance thought that was fantastic. And so what I did was, as he was moving around, I gave him marks where he could move into a pool of light and just turn his head, and the light would move across his face, and then he'd move out of that and appear in another bit of light that touched the top of his head, maybe, and you know, all of that stuff was all choreographed very carefully. But Donald Pleasence loved it. He just thought that was fantastic. You know, he's going, oh yeah, let's do that again. You know, so and he kept asking me each day, you know, when are we going to do that sort of lighting again? Because I love that stuff.
So, oh wow, that's so cool. That's awesome that you took something that you saw you really liked in, you know, another very famous movie and brought it to the Halloween franchise with Donald Pleasence.
Yeah.
Like, that's like blowing my mind right now. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was, Vittorio Storaro shot Apocalypse Now. But I've used a few of Vittorio Storaro's tricks over the years. And, that worked really well, and it worked really well for the storytelling in Halloween 5 as well. You know, and all the stuff when the SWAT guys come running in, and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I shot all that, you know, in a similar sort of style, so that there wasn't a lot of broad lighting, and it also helped me with the wide angle lens style that Dominic wanted to use. So I didn't have to use a lot of big lights and stuff. I could just use small lights and patches of light and have people move through it.
That's so cool, Rob. Wow. Let's talk about one of the, you know, more action-packed scenes in the movie, the car chase scene with Michael Myers at the helm, chasing, you know, Danielle Harris and chasing Tina. What was that like? Because it's my understanding that Don Shanks was driving for real. And were you in the passenger seat? Like, how did you guys do that?
Well, we did it from, you know, quite a few angles. I was handheld in the passenger seat for some of it, in the back seat for some of it. We had Ted Churchill on Steadicam running through the trees, and we had a couple of other cameras. I think we only had one camera on it, so a couple of other camera positions on longer lenses, carrying Tina running through, and then Danielle running through, and the car. But that was a funny night, because there was a whole bunch of Christmas trees that they had to buy to make it look like it was a field of Christmas trees. But they bought all the trees and planted them. And when the car drove into it, it just sank into the dirt and kept getting bogged. So when you see the dirt spraying out the back, a lot of that is the car bogged in the dirt.
Oh, wow.
and trying to get out. So sometimes we do. The car would go like 30 feet, and then the trees would all get caught underneath it. We'd have to stop and take it back, plant the trees again.
Wow.
And then it would go another 30 feet, and it would get bogged, and then we'd have to dig it out of the bog and send it back. But it was quite a funny night. And when you see the scene all put together, you would never know.
Yeah.
But that was a pretty fun night.
Yeah, it looks like it was fun for sure.
And then the next morning when we were driving back to Salt Lake City, because that was about 20 miles outside Salt Lake City on a farm, we got pulled over by the cops for speeding, so that wasn't too much fun.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that's
But that's a whole other story.
Well, I mean, we're here if you want to tell it.
Oh, no, it would take your entire podcast, but we were in the car driving back, and we were all sitting in the back of the car enjoying a beer, actually, on the way. Because we'd been shooting all night, so it was early. We're having a beer for breakfast.
Oh, my gosh.
Not the driver wasn't drinking, but when we got pulled over, the driver had injured his knee, and so the cop gave him a sobriety test
because he couldn't
stand on one leg, and so the cop figured he was drunk, and then pulled us out and lined us up and dressed us down, and it was pretty funny.
Oh my gosh. Of course that would happen.
Yeah, they let let us go with a warning that Dominic was hilarious because he kept telling him that he was Dominic Othman and Gerard, a famous director from Europe, and the cop kept saying, yeah, I don't care who you are, mate, you know, you're speeding on a road in Salt Lake City. But anyway, they gave us a stern warning and sent a letter to the production office, and yeah, we all got dressed down by the producers as well, so it was all good.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious, Rob. Wow. Well, it sure sounds like, you know, you guys all had a great time, you know, on set. I talked to Danielle Harris and I talked to Don Shanks, and it just seems like, you know, everyone had a blast making this movie, you know, and it really shows that it's a fun installment in the franchise, and I think a very unique one for sure.
The thing I would say is the tone on a movie gets set from the top down, and Mustafa Akkad was just such a wonderful guy to work with. And, I mean, he had a real family, his outlook was all family oriented. So, I know he had, you know, he was a fantastic, father for all his kids and a great family man, but he treated the film crew as if you were family as well.
Wow.
And, you know, there was a lot of pressure on it because it wasn't a big budget film, but Mustafa was just incredible. And I mean, the way he treated me with my wife, having a child when we're in the middle of production and everything, it was just amazing. But it wasn't just that. That's how he treated everyone. He treated everyone with, absolute respect. And, yeah, he was just a fantastic guy. So
wow.
I think part of the reason that even though there was a lot of pressure, it was still fun was that trickled down from Mustafa's overall outlook on life and the way he treated people.
Wow, that's so fantastic, Rob. It's great to hear. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your stories from the making of Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. And I have one more question for you, and it's a question I ask all of our Class of 89 graduates, and that's, if you could go back in time 30 years ago, what advice would you give yourself, either in regards to Halloween 5 or just to life in general?
Well, the one thing with Halloween 5 was that was my first Hollywood film. And I would sure like to go into that a little bit more prepared, and not so much in terms of the technical skills, but in terms of the management skills, the way you manage a crew and all that sort of thing. Because, you know, when I look back on it, I was a little bit green on that. I mean, it all worked and it all worked fine, but there were things that I could have done better from that regard. But that'd be the main thing. But I just wish that I'd had a little bit more of the management skills that you learn later on that you need as a DP.
Well, I think that's great, and we're so thankful for all of your contributions to our favorite horror movies. You know, we're really excited for the new Creepshow series on Shudder that you're the cinematographer on. And thank you for being an integral part of the Halloween franchise, Rob.
Well, fantastic. And thank you for all your nice comments. And I've really appreciated it.
Thanks for listening to Fangoria Presents Class of 89. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And follow Fangoria on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the horror content you crave. Class of 89 is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, produced and hosted by Natasha Pasetta, executive producers Dallas Saunier and Phil Nobile Jr., associate producer Jessica Safavimer, art and design by Ashley Detmering, sound recording, design, and mixing by Natasha Pasetta, music by James Malone, for Fangoria, Brandon Minardi, Jason Koslerich, Rachel Wilson, and special thanks to Udo Kier.